morning and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Here at Central Standard, we're starting our week with an age-old personal finance puzzle. To rent or to own? That is the question. For help answering what turns out to be a highly personal question, we turn to the Cash Money Crew, a group of regular guests representing the Financial Planning Association of Greater Kansas City. I'll let them introduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Sandy Weaver. I'm a CPA, a certified financial planner, and a chartered financial analyst, and an FPA member.
Yeah, and I'm David Jackson. I'm a financial advisor with Waddell & Reed and also a CFP.
Hi, I'm Lucas Blitchell. I'm a certified financial planner with KHC Wealth Management.
Okay, so you guys, let's get started. Conventional wisdom used to be that the financially prudent thing was to buy a house as soon as possible. Do not pass go. Do not collect $200. Did that attitude survive the recession?
Well, I don't think so. After the recession, you know, there are a lot of people still out there who are upside down on their homes. So
explain what that means, upside down on your home.
Well, they actually owe more on their home than what their home is worth. And so maybe they bought their home in 2007, 2008, and watched the collapse of the economy. And now they're stuck with a home that they've borrowed more against than what it's actually they could sell it for.
How is that affecting the housing market right now?
In a lot of ways, it's affecting it. There are a lot of people who would love to sell their homes right now, and they're just not able to because they know they'll take a loss. And, you know, maybe they're ready to downsize or something else, and they just can't make those moves.
Sandy, I wonder if the fact that so many homeowners have not felt like they're in a position to sell their homes changes the rental market in any way. I would think that a solution to a problem where maybe someone can't sell a home but needs, for whatever reason, to move would be to rent it out, and that would affect supply and demand.
It would certainly. Pardon me. Because you'll have a homeowner try to rent it out to cash flow against the mortgage to get enough rent to at least pay the mortgage. Then that frees them up to take a job out of the city, take a job on the other side of the city. And then obviously the more houses you have being let out for rent, you know, that creates more supply and then you don't need quite as many apartments.
So are attitudes toward renting changing, do you think?
I do think so, because if you look at home ownership back in 2007, 73% of Americans were owning homes. And now in 2012, it's dropped down to 62%. So, yeah, just 10% has shifted to not owning a home anymore.
When people who are sort of early in their adventures in adulthood come to you for advice, has your advice to them regarding home ownership changed?
Yes, indeed, because prices on real estate can go down. And before 2008, you didn't see too much of that. 2008 brought that home really hard. And so sometimes buying a house can be a bad decision if you don't have enough time, enough years to make it pay. You can actually, if you buy a home and say then in 2 or 3 years have to move on, you might take a loss or have to pay money to get out of that house versus if you rent, you're just break even.
Lucas Butchell, let's get started sort of teasing out whether housing is still a good investment. What are some of the factors that a person would have to consider to determine whether this is a good investment right now?
I think a variety of things. The biggest one, though, is what are the cash flows involved with owning a home? So most people understand that, you know, there's probably some level of down payment and then usually a mortgage payment that's going to come along with that, assuming you finance a good chunk of it. And most people will stop there. So it's, you know, what do I have to put down? What do I need to finance? But if you're a first-time home buyer, especially, you've never really understood that you have to pay property taxes. There's going to be a significant amount of ongoing upkeep and costs that you have to take care of with the house.
Right. So comparing a mortgage payment with monthly rent would not be the whole equation.
Exactly. You have to factor in all of the costs. And with the home, there's, you know, some of the things I just mentioned, plus things more costs for insurance. So there's a lot of other things that kind of get in the way and ultimately bring down the return that you might expect when you originally start crunching those numbers and comparing rent to the mortgage payment.
It seems like how much flexibility you have within your financial picture would be an important consideration because owning a home gives you a certain kind of flexibility. Like you can paint the walls whatever color you want. You can have whatever kind of pet you feel like, however many of them pending health code. but if your roof starts leaking, you can't tell the rain to wait a few months while you save up the money to repair it. So how do you figure out whether you have enough cash in reserve to help you weather situations like that?
Rule of thumb that I usually recommend to folks is making sure you've got at least 1% of the home's value or the purchase price of that in cash a year to fund kind of those ongoing repair and maintenance items. And it would also make sense to have an emergency fund as well, because if the roof leaks comes in month three of owning the house, you've got a significant cost there that you're going to have to front. And the last thing you want to be doing is taking on a bunch of debt to buy the home and then immediately have to borrow more money to handle some initial repairs.
David Jackson, I've heard that how long you think you will be staying in a home factors into whether this is a good decision. Do you think there's a good rule of thumb on that?
Yeah, I think there is. And that is a big factor in whether you buy or rent, because, you know, if you're only going to be in the home less than 5 years, let's say, the chances of you getting out of the home profitably is kind of slim. You know, you may get lucky and you're in a really good market where the prices appreciate a lot, but there's a good chance that you may just after real estate expenses, as far as the commission for the realtor and all, you may just break evens. But if you're going to be in the home for 5 years plus, it may make sense financially to make that that long-term investment and, you know, by the time you're ready to sell, come out with a profit.
I've looked at some of the numbers on the housing market nationally over the years, and it looks like if you were to look at 1975, which it looks like that's when they started kind of maintaining official records on this, to now, overall housing values have appreciated over that time. But depending on where you are along that line, it might be a very bad time to sell. And so would sort of the flexibility to see things through for decades and decades, I mean, does that really increase the chances that your investment is going to be a sound one?
Yeah, it increases your chances dramatically, but still, depending on what market you're in, it may not be a huge, you know, once you factor in inflation and how much money did you make relative to the cost of living, et cetera, it still may not be a huge difference. So the one side of it is at least when you're paying your mortgage, you're building up some equity. So you're building, you know, almost a forced savings. But if you're looking at buying your home and saying, that's going to be my investment and I'm going to make some money off this deal, thinking of it that way may not be the wisest thing to do.
Sandy, I've heard also some people try to make comparisons between housing market and stock market to determine whether this is a valuable investment. But it seems like that would also be kind of maybe not an entirely fair comparison, just because if you don't buy a house, you still have to pay for somewhere to live.
Right.
So how would you say people could use the comparison of the stock market and the housing market to determine whether this is a good idea, factoring in some of those complications that if you don't invest in the stock market, you don't still have to put money towards some equivalent thing?
Well, usually on stocks, the long-term rate of return is, you know, 10 to 12%. And that's just straight stocks. But usually if you're thinking of financial assets, it's more bonds and stocks, and you might have an average rate of return, you know, 6 to 7%. And that is higher than the rate of return on real estate, which tends to be 0 to 1% above the rate of inflation.
Can you explain that a little bit more?
The long-term rate of inflation is about 3%. So, you know, based on which source you're looking at, you know, residential real estate appreciates either 0 to 1% above that. So, you know, real estate, your house may appreciate about 4% over a very long term basis.
What would that mean to me if I were a homeowner?
Okay.
Say I had bought a house 20 years ago. My income has changed in certain ways based on inflation, even if I'm in the same job. All sorts of things have not changed. So all that's changed is inflation.
Okay. Then your house will probably have appreciated 3 to 4%. But if you look at it this way, which is referring back to what David said, you know, you can either spend that monthly payment on a mortgage or on rent. But you do, like you say, have to live someplace. So if you do spend it on a mortgage and you make sure that it's affordable based on your income picture, then you have built up equity. And so after 20 years, you do have something, even if it is just at 3% or 4%.
Well, we would love to get our listeners weighing in on this question of the financial pros and cons of renting versus buying. Do your own experiences challenge or confirm conventional wisdom regarding home ownership? Give us a call at 816-235-2888. That number again is 816-235-2888. And I'd like to turn back to the Cash Money crew here in the studios of Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. In the past, the rent or own decision was in part a matter of whether you wanted to live in a house or if an apartment would suit your purposes. But house meant ownership and apartment meant rental. But with so many condos for sale and houses for rent these days, has the picture become muddied, Lucas Butchel?
It really has, especially if you're willing to accept kind of the lifestyle that you live in a condo. Because a condo very much feels like, kind of a very similar to apartment living or rental living. And there are some great deals in the condo market downtown that you can really look at, because that's an area that hasn't rebounded as much as some of the kind of single family homes that you see out in the suburbs. So, I think the attractiveness there is you're close to the urban center. So you've got access and quicker access to a lot of the things that the city offers. And you have, more group living in that sense of community and experience can be fun. And if that's what you're looking for, it might be a really good opportunity to have some ownership. Those condos tend to be a little bit easier to rent out as opposed to a single family home out in the suburbs.
Something that I hear a lot about in my own circles is sweat equity. People who can put blood, right, sweat, tears, and a lot of time into their homes, and that's a part of the financial picture. What is your sense of whether sweat equity changes the investment picture?
It could in a large way, but you have to look at it from both sides. So the sweat equity idea is, okay, I'm going to buy something that's really inexpensive, and then me and my spouse, we're going to do the work to get this place up to snuff, and it's going to be worth a whole lot more. And we got the satisfaction of having done it ourselves, So from that standpoint, it's a great deal. But what if you don't like to fix stuff? What if you don't like to do your own painting?
And what if it turns out you're terrible at it?
Yeah. And then you have to call somebody else in to do the work for you or come back and replace what you screwed up. Then it's not such a good idea. So it's not for everybody, but for some people, it's a heck of a deal.
That makes me think about just the role of time in all of this. I mean, with so many couples and so many families, two income households, people don't have time to do some of the home upkeep and maintenance that I like to imagine that there was a time when everyone wasn't just working all the time. And it seems like maybe does considering whether you have time to take care of a home properly factor into this decision as well?
Oh, yes, definitely. There is a huge difference in lifestyle, I think, between owning a home and owning a condo. We were talking before the show, when you have a condo or an apartment, you're sort of living out. You don't have to spend time whether the sink stopped working last night or, there's a crack in the ceiling, what do I do about it, or all these doors stick, or, I have to mow the lawn because it's raining every week and I need to mow every 5 days. so those things go away if you're in a condo. If there's a problem, you call the landlord, yeah, or in an apartment, excuse me.
I think back to my own experience. When I bought my first home, I think I was in my early 30s, and I decided I was going to buy a home because I was single and I was just out all the time. I said, well, if I have a home, it'll force me to stay home a little bit more because I'll have to do this stuff. And then after about 6 months, it's like, dog, was that a very good idea?
Did it work? Did you stay home more?
Well, eventually I got married and I had to stay home more. So, yes, it did.
That's funny. What about the rest of you? Lucas, do you own your own home?
I do. I do own my own home. And I absolutely hear what Sandy's saying about, there's always something. My weekends, there's inevitably something every weekend, it seems like, especially in the summertime, that I'm doing either with the lawn, with the house, repairing, kind of being Mr. Fix-It. And, I think you can absolutely do it yourself, or you can pay somebody to do it. But if you pay somebody, there's a cost to that. And I think that's something that you have to consider is if you don't have those skills, you don't have the time, or you just don't like doing it, you can pay somebody to come in and take care of that for you. You just have to factor that in as part of the decision. If you're wired that way, sometimes it's easier just to pick up the phone and call the landlord and say, hey, come take care of this.
As we hear news about the housing market picking up in general, I guess I'm wondering who that benefits exactly. in the housing picture, the first-time buyer, does the first-time buyer benefit from an improving housing market?
Not necessarily, because they're going from cash and they're buying. So they benefit most when housing prices are depressed. Someone who is selling and their house value is above their mortgage level, you know, that benefits them to some extent. It depends. If they're downsizing, they benefit the most. But if they're just moving level or buying a bigger house, then they don't benefit that much.
We've got tons of calls, and I have tons of questions. Let's go to the callers, though, and let them have a chance right now, and we'll get back to my questions. We've got Joe in Kansas City, Missouri, on the line.
Hi, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go ahead.
I was wondering, I heard on the KC Business Journal report on KCUR that owning a home is still, quote-unquote, cheaper than renting. And I was wondering if you could shed some light on that. Does that just take into account, like, price per square foot? Or does that take into account of all the upkeep we were just talking about with owning a home? And also, can you use some resources to see if we are one of those people that are upside down on our home?
All right. Okay, so let's first start with this. How do we figure out whether it is cheaper to buy or rent, if that's the only thing that people are deciding between? They just want to do what's cheaper.
Well, you know, one of the things that we didn't even talk about with renting is the fact that you have the chance of your rent payment going up every single year. You know, because the landlord has that option every year to raise your rent, whereas once you get a mortgage, all you have to worry about going up really is your taxes and insurance. So over a long period of time, you know, I have clients that now still have, you know, they're close to retirement, they still have a mortgage, but they're only paying maybe $500 or $600 a month because they had that, you know, took that mortgage out way back when.
But what if it's not a fixed rate mortgage? Aren't there kinds of mortgages where you are confronting a certain amount of unpredictability?
I mean, and that's kind of what got the economy in trouble. A lot of those fixed rate mortgages that reset at higher rates than what people were expecting. And, you know, but that's a whole nother topic there.
Yeah.
But, you know, you're thinking as which is cheaper. It kind of depends on your personal situation, because, like I said, you escape a lot of maintenance costs, it's issues like that with renting, but you do have to worry about your rent going up every single year.
And I think Joe was also wondering how you figure out for certain, if you aren't actually going through the process of putting your house on the market, whether you're upside down on your investment.
Yeah, there's a variety of ways you can pursue this. So there's definitely some good online resources. Zillow comes to mind. Is kind of a name that you can go out there and search and get a rough estimate of the value of your home based on recent sales. That's really what should drive it is, you know, what your property tax statement says really doesn't matter. You're trying to figure out what the market value of your home is. So Zillow is a good place to start. You can also look for homes in your area that are similar in terms of size and bedrooms, that type of thing. Go see what those have sold for. If there's been some recent activity, that's a great gauge to what your house is really worth. If you're really interested or you're wanting to get a little more serious about it, pick up the phone and call a realtor or two and have them come out and walk through the home with you and give you an idea. A lot of the realtors are more than willing to come out and do that. They're making a personal connection. If you're looking to sell your home, which a lot of folks are, if you're really pursuing the value, hey, you've got a great opportunity for a new client there with a realtor. So they're absolutely willing to come out and do that, and they can do some more in-depth market research and find out you know, how they would price it, which would give you a pretty good sense on what it might be worth today.
How do you find the right person to do these kinds of things? I mean, if you're just not very familiar with this real estate landscape, how do you evaluate whether you're working with someone who knows what they're doing and has your interests at heart?
I think the best place to start is friends and family and get a really good solid referral. So somebody that's got a relationship with them, maybe has done multiple transactions with them. It's not always a guaranteed gauge, but what it is it's somebody that's kind of walked that walk already. And if they've had a good experience, oftentimes they'll share and make a referral. If they've had a bad experience, they're almost always will share. And sometimes you give more than you bargained for in terms of what it would be like working with them.
Also, when you're working with a realtor, there are those that are buyer's agent versus seller's agent. So you want to make sure that their interests are aligned with yours.
Interesting. Okay, well, let's talk to Jonas in Overland Park. Hi, Jonas.
Hey, how are you doing this morning?
Great. How about you?
Hey, I think it's all about your personality. I think that whether you buy or own a house, it's an expense. It's going to be an expense the rest of your life. And I think there's freedoms in either scenario. And some people just love having their own house because they can play the radio loud or have the gardens they like. And then some people love the freedom of not having any responsibility. But I think in the long run, it all comes out to be an expense. And I really think that it has to do with the demographics of what the city's like. It's all, that's really where the pricing is. But I think owning a home is awesome. But if you added up all the cost of operations that it takes throughout the years and that kind of thing, you may not actually have as much actual equity in it as you would hope, but it's an awesome process to own a house and watch your earnings grow.
Jonas, you've given us a lot to talk about, and I want to follow up on everything you've just mentioned, but I also want to ask you about your own perspective on this. What's your relationship with the housing market of Kansas City?
Well, I work on houses. I mean, I've worked on houses for almost 15 years, and I meet people who buy houses who tell me, I shouldn't have bought a house. I was a better renter. And they're happier spending their money renting than they were buying a house because they didn't anticipate the amount of attention and just everything you have to think through when you buy a piece of property. I work for people who buy a house and they're happy crazy because they're doing whatever they want to it.
Did a lot of these people hiring you think that they were going to be doing these projects themselves that you are being brought in to work on?
Some people buy houses knowing that they have the financial resources to just pay for everything. A lot of people kind of dream about fixing up their houses and get started and then learn through the cost of buying tools and materials that, they're going to hire out some of it. And so it's all in between. It's everything you can imagine. Some people buy houses and never take care of them, and then they lose money, right?
Yeah.
That's a piece of property.
Yep. Yeah, they don't take care of themselves is what I hear. Well, Jonas has made a ton of points, and he mentions that he thinks owning a house is awesome, that that's his own personal experience. And I first want to touch on that because we've talked about a lot of the little discussed costs of home ownership, but we haven't talked a lot about some of the financial benefits of home ownership.
Well, one thing I do want to mention is being here in the Midwest and in the Kansas City area, it is great to own a home. I had some family come in last summer, one from Philadelphia and one from San Diego, when they're visiting my house. And they just could not believe how big my house was and how much lawn I had and everything for the type of money that I paid, you know, because you know, on the West Coast, they'd have been, you know, seven figures for the same home that I paid, you know, a whole lot less for. So, you know, that's one of the great benefits we have in this area is that our property values relative to the rest of the country are pretty low. You get a lot of bang for your buck. So
of that's course, the size of the house goes up, the size of the lawn goes up, then the cost of heating and cooling your house
maintenance,
goes up.
The whole bit.
Yeah. But he also mentioned the emotional piece of this puzzle. And so the question of whether to rent or buy, you know, you can find an inexpensive house to buy. You can find a very expensive apartment to rent. Obviously, the financial question isn't the only one. That happens to be your area of expertise. But could we talk a little bit about the emotional picture? Do people's emotions guide them in good and bad directions financially?
Absolutely, and not just with real estate or investments, but pretty much in most decisions that people make, emotions are a big piece of it. So with owning a home, I think there is definitely an emotional element. I think the biggest thing that I hear from clients is the permanence feel. It's our own. We get to do with it what we want, but it feels like home. Renting always feels impermanent. So you know, there's always a chance that, you know, next year you're going to make a different decision. You may get bumped out of the house or the apartment if the landlord so chooses to sell it or whatever the case may be. When you own your own home, it's yours. You know, the space around it's yours. You can have the pets that you want. You mentioned that earlier. That's a big thing for folks is, you know, pets are members of the family. And the last thing they want is a landlord telling them what they can or can't have or their dog barks too much or whatever the case is. So the emotional element really comes to play, and I think with home ownership, I think that's probably one of the things that people talk about the least, but it's probably the most important when people are making buying decisions.
You know, another part of that is I use my own family as an example. My mom owned a home, and one of her big desires was to be able to leave the home to us in the family. And my sister had no interest in the home. I have no interest in the home, but for my brother, he's living in the home after she passed away. He's living in the home. So her ability to pass that home on to somebody else was really important to her.
All right. Well, we'll be right back to this conversation with the Cash Money crew about the question of renting versus buying. When does it make financial sense to rent where you live? And when does it make good financial sense to buy your own home? 816-235-2888. We'll get back to your questions and more after the break. I'm Gina Kaufman.
You may ask yourself, what is that beautiful house? You may ask yourself, where does that highway go to? And you may ask yourself, am I right? Am I wrong? And you may say to yourself, my God, what have I done?
Welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman, and we could not resist playing a little Talking Heads this morning because my God, what have I done might be a common sentiment, whatever you decide about renting versus buying. I'm here with the Cash Money crew, and I'd like them to reintroduce themselves.
Hi, I'm Sandy Weaver.
I'm David Jackson with Waddell & Reed.
I'm Lucas Butcher with KHC Wealth Management.
And okay, so we were just talking about the many benefits of renting, and we were talking about that quite a bit, partly because conventional wisdom has tended for many years to steer people away from renting. But we should acknowledge that buying has its advantages.
And one of the reasons I hate to see somebody spending a large amount monthly for rent is because they could be buying a house for that. And as David has mentioned before, building up equity. And so it's a good financial decision. If you've got the time and your situation says you can park, you know, for 5 years or longer, then, you know, buying a house, making sure you run the housing affordability analysis so that you can afford it. But then you're building up equity, you know. And
explain what you mean by building up equity for those of us who don't speak this particular language.
Okay, well, you're buying an asset then over a long-term installment basis. You know, so when you are 65, you know, let's say you do want to move into, you know, an independent living facility or whatever, you've got a house you can sell and your mortgage is probably paid off by then.
And perhaps you've retired and aren't still earning income and need to be able to still have a place to live.
Yeah, so if you're going to make a big payment every month, you know, rent, it just goes to buy that apartment for the next 30 days. But if you make the same payment and it goes to a mortgage, you're buying an asset.
I've thought about a little bit as well how what stage you're at in life affects this decision, whether you're at the early stage of your career, single, or maybe further along in your life, looking, staring down retirement, you've got kids, whatever. How does that affect the picture?
Well, that's huge. You know, you think about a young person right out of college, you know, and they don't know where they're going to live or where the job opportunities are going to be. And they may need to, on a, you know, a moment's notice, decide, hey, I'm moving out to the West Coast to take this job. But once you get a little bit more established and kids come into the picture, you're wanting that idea of being grounded and, you know, putting roots down somewhere and say, you know, this is mine and we're going to be here for a while. You know, things may happen that change that equation, but, you know, having that mentality, this is my place and I'm going to do what I want with it. It's important.
Another factor to consider, though, is if your job might move. Even here in Kansas City, we've seen some tax policy changes where businesses might be moving across state lines. So if you're with a young company that may not be around long, or say you're with a company that, you know, perhaps is looking to move across state lines, you don't want to end up with a 45-minute commute either. So it might be worth waiting a year or two for some of that dust to settle, too.
The employment picture has changed so much for so many people. That used to be that the expectation was that you got hired on somewhere and that there was loyalty in both directions and you were going to stay in that situation, in that place. And now with the need for flexibility, really, in terms of how the job market works, is that affecting advice that you would be giving to young people?
It really is. I have a client that had a daughter that was, you know, fresh out of school, a few years out, and had been entertaining the idea of going back to grad school, but had gotten a good job, was making a good living. Her dad really wanted her to buy a house, commit. It's a good investment, blah, blah, blah. And she was tepid about that, and it kind of, he brought us in and actually had to sit down with the daughter to have a conversation about it. And it really came down to, you know, kind of dad owned a home through the 80s and 90s where, you know, owning a home provided a little bit higher than average rate of return compared to some of those historical norms we mentioned and was very much biased towards that. But everything in the situation for me told her that, you know, renting was the right choice, potentially going to grad school out of state. young, single, didn't really, you know, was okay with where she was at, but definitely thinking, you know, maybe some different options, maybe even in a different state. So lots of uncertainty in terms of the next 3 to 5 to 7 years. And why would you want to tie yourself down with a home that you may not make money on, but definitely would be more difficult to pick up and move?
One additional thing for young people is, and I'm reading some information from the National Association of Realtors, is 43% of them have student loans. Student loans are not necessarily at cheap interest rates. And again, if you have grad school or you might be following a job around, but, you know, saving up for a down payment can be pretty difficult. A lot of younger people have credit card debt that they've come out of college with. And just we have clients that have helped their children with student loans, but those are big numbers, $60,000, $80,000. Right. So it may be that they need to have really inexpensive housing for a while till they can make some big chips in those debt levels.
Man, that is so huge, too. You think about there's so many recent graduates out there who, if not for the student loans, they would be looking at buying a home.
Yeah.
But, yeah, they're trying to service these loans at $500, $700, $800 a month. It's like it really restricts, you know, what you can do. And that's had an impact on our economy overall, too.
Well, we want you to join in this conversation at 816-235-2888. That number, again, is 816-235-2888. We've got Blaine in Kansas City on the line now. Hi, Blaine.
Good morning. I have been a renter for a number of years. In fact, I've rented the same house for 9 years. And I think that one of the keys to renting is making sure that you're that the person that you're renting from and the place that you live is a good match with you. I've always been lucky. I've always rented throughout my whole life, and I've always been lucky to have landlords who trusted me to do things with the property that weren't going to damage the property or anything like that. And I really kind of enjoy doing some minor work on the property, taking care of the yard, that kind of stuff. But what I do appreciate about renting is if I have to have a new roof, I'm not responsible for it. If I have to have a new air conditioner, I'm not responsible for it. So those, you know, big time expenses are taken off my plate.
Hey, Blaine, you mentioned that you found a renter and a property that matched with you really well. Do you have advice for people in terms of how to achieve that kind of situation? I mean, you said you've rented for a long time, so you've probably had a little trial and error on that.
It's always been mostly networking, you know, just talking to your friends who rent about, you know, who they rent from. You know, what kind of properties they're renting. If you see something, if you, for instance, the house that I live in right now, some friends of mine had moved into many years ago, and I said to them, I said, if this place ever comes up for rent, please let me know. And they did.
So that's the advice from longtime renter Blaine. Thanks so much, Blaine.
Certainly. Thank you.
Something that we were just talking about before we took Blaine's call was interest rates. And I want to get back to that because I feel like interest isn't something that you would be paying if you were renting. And although that I think many aspects of homeownership are deductible, that doesn't mean that they are just free, you know, in the grand scheme of things. So can you explain a little bit about how the interest rates are right now and what is deductible, what isn't, and what that even means?
Well, on interest rates, it's running about 4.25% if you're doing a 30-year fixed loan. You get to deduct the amount of interest expense on your tax return. You get to deduct the amount of property tax that you pay. And for an average $200,000 home, that might be $2,500. For more expensive homes, you can go up to, you know, $7,000. But the interest expense on a mortgage, you get a greater deduction at the early years of your mortgage. You get a much lower amount of interest expense in the later years. When you're on year 29 and 30, you get very little interest expense. But those are deductions. And so, you know, let's say that your total interest expense plus real estate tax was $10,000. That saves you, you know, $3,000 in real taxes that you would have to pay.
Interesting.
And one thing I would want to bring up, because I used to sell real estate on a kind of a part-time basis back in the early 80s.
Oh, okay.
So Sandy's talking about interest rates at 4.25%. Back then, interest rates were at 18%. I mean, so the cost of home ownership back in the 80s was a lot higher than it is now. So one of the big reasons why people should take advantage of buying a home is these low interest rates. The low cost of money makes homes a lot more affordable. So, you know, you have to weigh those kind of factors in. And right now, even though interest rates are trending upwards, it's still a bargain compared to the 80s.
When did the interest rates start dropping?
Well, over the late 90s and then even in the 2000s, we've had a nice little run where interest rates have declined, and they just started going back up here in the last, 6, 9 months?
Mm-hmm. So are people's impressions that interest – might people be under the impression that interest rates are high because they're increasing very recently?
Yeah, some people have the attitude that maybe now is the time to buy because they are seeing interest rates go up and they don't want to miss the boat. But they're still, like I said, they're still historically pretty low.
Well, here to talk about interest rates, we've got a call from Susan in Kansas City, Missouri. Hi, Susan.
Hi. I've been listening to this. I'm kind of a renter now, and I was thinking about buying, but I'm not quite there yet. But I wanted to point out, I was glad you touched on the tax credits of owning a house, the low mortgage rates for percentages. But also, in Kansas City, surprisingly, I think because inventory is low, rent is really high. It's not cheap to rent. So having a mortgage, putting together the taxes you would pay, home insurance, is still, to find a quality apartment in Kansas City, is still quite a bit lower.
Well, thanks so much, Susan. Anyone want to respond to what Susan has said?
Yeah, I think that that's a dynamic that has shifted really since the 2006-2007 housing bubble burst. Is you know, Sandy mentioned the stats at the top of the show that roughly 10% less folks in the U.S. Broadly are owning a home and are, you know, by default probably renting instead, unless they're, you know, living with family or something like that. And so there's a lot more renters out there. And the amount of houses and apartments probably hasn't, you know, increased to that level. So, you know, that's just kind of supply and demand 101, driven up the cost and the price of rents because landlords are full up. So they feel like they can raise prices. And so that, coupled with the fact that interest rates are really, really low, so your mortgage payment is lower than probably it usually would be. So you've got a lower cost to own a home and a higher comparative rent rate seems to put dynamics from a financial standpoint a little bit more towards buying right now.
As a non-economist and person who tends to be, if anything, maybe a little bit suspicious and nervous when it comes to anything having to do with anything financial, when I listen to news about an improving housing market, I'm interested in the fact that it's always being compared to pre-recession levels, which that seems strange to me because that what turned out not to be a reasonable measure of a healthy housing economy. And because those were unrealistic and headed for disaster. I wonder how can we get a picture of this without just using pre-recession levels as a comparison? Or am I just crazy to be nervous about this?
No, you're not. No, you're not. Because one of the big things that came out of the pre-recession numbers is that there's an affordability index where they just say the average cost of owning a home is this and the average person is earning this. And so can the average person afford to own a home? I mean, it's just a really simple equation. And they found out that in 2006, 2007, the affordability index had really gotten out of whack. So, you know, that is one of the calculations. I don't know what the affordability index is right now. I'm not a real estate expert, but that is something to be concerned about. You make a really valid point there.
Let's hear from Rick in Topeka. Hi, Rick.
Hi. I have a couple questions about houses underwater. The first is, what's the impact on equity if your house is underwater? And the second is, what's the impact of equity on equity if you're maybe just your nose and your eyes are above water?
Could you define your nose and your eyes being above water? What do you mean by that, Rick?
Oh, you have almost no equity in the house.
Okay, I'm going to get some of our experts to translate the question a little bit because I'm a little lost.
So the first question is, if your house is underwater, meaning you owe more on the home than the home is worth today. The impact on equity is it means you have negative equity. So you don't have any equity. In fact, you owe more than you actually own. So what that means is if you're looking to sell that home, you've got a lot of limitations. Because if you're going to sell it, you know, with a traditional sale, you're going to have to bring money to closing. Most people expect to get a check at closing, you know, getting that equity out. In this case, you'd actually have to bring a check if you were going to sell that home. So it really limits your ability to sell. Or, you know, you'd have to go through a short sale or some sort of a transaction where you negotiate with the bank to write off a piece of your debt.
We heard a lot about short sale a few years ago, but maybe just remind our listeners what that is.
Yep. So what that is you're agreeing with the bank to sell your home for less than it's worth. And then, you know, whatever, you know, negative equity that exists, you know, the bank is generally going to write that off for you. You know, but it's a long drawn out process. It's not an easy sale process and it can harm your credit. So it's not a free lunch.
So what do you recommend to people in a situation like that? What is the best what is the smartest thing to do?
Well, if they can afford to stay in the home a little bit longer and wait, I think, you know, that probably is something that should be seriously considered. You know, but if it's something that they're, you know, they need to make a move, you know, short sale is definitely an idea. The other option is renting the property. You know, so can you convert this home that you live in into a rental and cash flow most or all of that back? And be able to either wait it out and hopefully get some appreciation or be able to pay down the debt or make it be a cash flow neutral or positive event for you. And then you've got a rental property investment as opposed to a house that's underwater.
Yeah, we were going to talk about that a little bit anyway, weren't we? It's like renting out a house is not all it's cracked up to be, you know. So, you know, a lot of people go into this attitude that, hey, I'll buy this little property, I'll rent it out and make all this money off of it. Is not easy to make money as a landlord.
Why not?
Well, part of it is you're responsible for all the repairs, everything that goes wrong, and you know, and you're kind of at the mercy of your renter. Are they going to take care of your property? They may be the type of person who's just going to tear your place up and then move out, and then you got to come in as soon as they move out and repair everything all over again. So it's not always the moneymaker that it may seem to be.
It also sounds like if your primary home, you've bought it and now you're underwater in it, that you, in order to rent out that property, you have to live somewhere else yourself.
Right.
Right.
Let's turn to Justin in Brookside. Hi, Justin. Welcome to Central Standard, Justin.
Yes. I have a question regarding trust. I have a trust fund with about $600,000 in it, and I was curious. The trust specifies rent will be paid perpetually for, you know, as long as it needs. But should I try and force them to consider buying a house instead of spending it on rent? Or is that possible since the trust says irrevocable and they are a letter of the law type of operation?
You want to take that, Sandy?
Yeah. Are you understanding the question?
I think so. It's an odd one, but if it's an irrevocable trust, then you can sit down and have a conversation with the trustee at this point and see if there are any other articles in the trust documents, such as HEMS, Health, Education, Maintenance, and Support, by which you may be able to get a mortgage payment qualified versus a rent payment. But it's probably a discussion with the trustee close examination of that trust document.
And one thing I'd add to that is if you're going to go in and have a conversation with the trustee, is to prepare yourself for it. So kind of lay out what the rental costs are that you're paying, you know, what the benefits of buying would be, and kind of go in and make a case for that instead of, hey, I'd like to buy a house and stop there. Is, you know, go in and plead your case and do it with numbers and back it up with logic.
If you're just tuning in, you're listening to Central Standard on KCUR 89.3 FM. I'm Gina Kaufman here with Sandy Weaver, David Jackson, and Lucas Butchell. They are our Cash Money crew. And Tom called in from Overland Park with a question. He wasn't able to stay on the line, but he wants to know, because there are so many retiring boomers looking to downsize, are school districts important anymore? How does this impact real estate?
Well, it does for families. But he makes a really valid point that, you know, with the baby boomers, as they're retiring, they're not thinking about school districts, and in a lot of cases they're wanting to downsize, but not necessarily. But for the up-and-coming families, the school district is one of the biggest keys to, you know, the purchase or where you're going to purchase. And we really didn't talk about it a lot, but the whole key to real estate as an investment is location. You know, so
location.
Yeah, exactly. Yes. You know, we really didn't discuss that, but that's it. You know, it's really it. And when you're talking about, are you going to make money off this property or not? Where is it and what's that neighborhood doing and what's it going to do over the next 10, 15 years?
It seems like for someone who does decide to go the buying route, the ability to forecast many factors about his or her own life and about just the communities, the neighborhoods, the economy is a pretty important skill. Do you find that you are in a situation of often advising your clients as far as many of these forecasting powers go?
Yes, we are. For example, we have a client in Arkansas who wants to buy a house and change it into a rental. But again, it depends whether that is, it's a small community. It depends whether it's close to a growing area, economic area, or if it's going to continue and just, you know, downsize and disappear off the face of the earth. So that depends, you know, what you live in or what you decide to keep and rent out later on. You know, that all goes into that, whether you can, the market value stays, whether you can, you know, have a rent or if you decide to pay.
Yeah, and having that crystal ball really helps, huh?
Yeah, it does.
The house is going to appreciate for sure.
But, you know, of course you don't have crystal balls, but when your clients come to you, surely you see patterns over time.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering if there are frequent situations where you appear to have some sort of magical power just because you've seen certain scenarios play out over and over again.
Yeah, I think so. And David really hit on it in terms of location with real estate, both at a very local level, but also, you know, what the economic area is like. So that's an important factor. Neighborhoods are big. So if you're buying a big family house that, you know, is going to be a place to raise kids, schools really matter. So you wouldn't want to go buy a family type house in a area that's got a declining or a really bad school district just because it's, you know, it's probably not going to be an attractive home. So thinking through those situations and then kind of trying to look forward. But, you know, life is rarely predictable. And so, you know, kind of doing the best you can on the assumptions, putting some thought into it, and then, you know, making the best decision for yourself at the current time and knowing that life will probably change before you wrap it up.
We've acted so far as though buying and renting are the only two options. Some people do, in fact, build new homes. And I wonder if that's an option that you see people interested in still. Is that still a popular option?
Oh, by all means. And that's one of those things that kind of came to a screeching halt right after the recession. And we really haven't talked about the financing of property in the beginning, because we went from a period where it was really easy to get a loan to buy a house or build a home, to just the opposite now. And when you go talk to the lenders, they're going to want so much detail about your finances and your wherewithal and ability to pay back that loan that those dynamics have changed, you know, fairly dramatically.
Yikes.
But as the market's improving, you know, we are seeing home building activity coming back into fore. And, you know, it's a pretty gratifying feeling to be able to say, this is how I want this house exactly, and tell the builder, you know, these are the, you know, things that I want in this home, and have it be all yours.
Is building a new home a good investment, would you say?
I mean, it can be. You know, the price of a new home is going to be based on specifics, whereas buying a second home or a secondary home is based on market conditions.
So we've spent most of this show talking about buying versus renting. Let's say now that some particular listener has made up this decision already. They know they're going to rent. They know they're going to buy. Let's start with the buyer. This person's sure they're going to buy. What are some of the different ways of buying and paying for a house and just some basic key advice?
Well, you want to make sure that I go back to the numbers, how much you're going to pay for a house, whether you can afford it. And I think you need to, as Lucas had mentioned earlier in the program, you need to know that your only cost is not going to be just a mortgage payment. You have to come up with a down payment. But also in the monthly amount for the house, you want to have realistic expectations on what your real estate is going to be, what your insurance is going to be. You know, stuff is going to break down. What is that going to cost you per year? And are you going to want furniture? Are you going to be painting walls, redoing anything in there? What is that realistically going to be? So you have a bottom line on what that's going to cost you per month to live in that house. And then make sure that's within 30% of your income levels. Those are usually the guidelines.
And Lucas, what would you say to people who are sure they're renting? What are some pitfalls to watch out for if you're going that route?
I think the biggest ones are looking for a good landlord. So the one of the callers mentioned it earlier. That's key to having a good experience. If you have pets, make sure you pop the hood and really look at the pet policy. I can't tell you how many folks I've talked to, both clients and otherwise, that kind of got in the way of a good experience in a hurry. And then look at the numbers and find a place that's affordable and offers you the flexibility that you're probably looking for when you've decided to be a renter.
When you're thinking about whether to rent or buy, your emotions obviously come into this picture. Are there any sort of red flags to watch out for as far as your emotions may be guiding you in the wrong direction according to your financial picture?
Well, I think a big portion of it is, can you afford it? And, you know, there are some costs involved with home ownership that you may not be thinking about. And, you know, I see this all the time where a real estate agent will tell their person, hey, you know what, based on your income, you can afford a house that's, you know, $500,000, $700,000 based on your income. But can you really afford it? You know, just because the bank will loan you that kind of money, does it really make sense for your particular situation? So you really have to really take a close look at what's really right for you.
Well, that is all the time we have for today's conversation about housing and whether you rent or buy, there is no place like home. So thank you so much to Lucas Butchell, Sandy Weaver, and David Jackson of the Financial Planning Association.
Easy for you to say.
Of Greater Kansas City. They are the Cash Money Crew. See you all next month. To this show or any of our past shows, go online to kcur.org/centralstandard. You can also stay current on Central Standard News by following us on Twitter. Our handle is @KCURCST. Tune in tomorrow for a discussion of what it means to dress appropriately in 2014, especially as the weather heats up, putting modesty in competition with personal comfort. Are we living in a world without rules? Is that progress? Tune in tomorrow. Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. I'm Gina Kaufman. That's it for today. Stick around for Up to Date next.